Downloading. 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are Stephen Scott.
Hey!
Sean Priest.
What?
And Tim Schwartz.
Well, hello.
Welcome to the program. Yes, this is Tech Talk, the show that's just like the US midterm elections, absolutely gripping and thrilling, but less disastrous than the outcome. Hello, yes, I am Stephen Scott. I've got Sean Priest and Tim Schwartz with me. Hello, guys.
Hello, Stephen Scott. Let's wait to the end to see how disastrous this has been.
Yes, well...
Yeah, just give us a moment, Stephen. Hello.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see how the show goes first. Listen, we've got lots of talking to do this hour.
Anyone would think we were on the radio.
Anyone would, wouldn't you? We're going to be talking with Stuart Lawler in just a moment. He is from Sight and Sound Technology. Do you know, every time there's a Sight Village, right, they introduce something new, and it's always something new and shiny, and we always hear about it after the fact, don't we? We always get left behind along with the rest of them. Well, this time round, we are first. Yeah, we're moving up in the world, guys.
Yeah, but we're not there, Stephen. That's the point. Have we been banned?
I think it's not banned. I think it's just not invited.
I blame you.
You've been blacklisted, Stephen.
Well, you know, it's just I didn't realise that all the shortbread they gave out for free wasn't all just for me. I thought it was just one or two bits, one or two plates I could take. But anyway, never mind. We'll be talking about that. Sight Village London, of course, taking place this week as we record. We're going to be talking to Sally Buchan as well, who got in touch with our show because she heard us wittering on. I don't think that's the words she used, that's the words I'm using. Sally's daughter is 12 years old and has a visual impairment, and Sally wants to know what kind of computer she should buy her daughter. And for some unknown reason, she's come to us for advice. So we're going to try our best to help her out. That's coming up on this week's TED Talk. Oh, yes! And your emails. Lots and lots of emails coming up. A fanfare to get us into the show. Right, first up, we are going to talk about Sight Village. Now, Sight Village London is happening Tuesday and Wednesday of this week, so as the show's going out, if you're listening on the podcast, then it may well have happened, in which case then you are in for a treat, because I'm going to tell you about one of the pieces of technology that has made it to the floor of Sight Village in London, and it's brand new, and if you like Braille, you're going to love this. Stuart Lawler is on with us from Sight and Sound Technology. Hello to you, Stuart.
Thanks very much, Stephen. Great to be here.
Now, Sight Village London, Stuart, is happening this week, and you're going to tell us now about a product that is coming, a new Braille device. Is that right?
Yeah, it's... I think it's kind of interesting. Over the last 2 years, it's kind of been the era of new Braille devices, and I suppose more affordable Braille devices, which is always welcome. This is slightly different. One of the things people have been exploring, I suppose, over the last little while is using a Braille display and input keyboard on the Braille display to not only input Braille, but to control their computer. And there are lots of key combinations within a couple of the popular screen readers that allow you to do that on certain Braille displays. But there's a lot to learn, I think, when you're doing that. So HIMS, the company in Korea who've brought us products like the Braille Sense in the past, have come out with a device called the QBraille XL. And this is a 32-cell Braille display with a Braille input keyboard. But uniquely, it then contains some of the keys, I suppose, or I was going to say the key keys, the main keys that you would want to find on a Windows keyboard. So you have your function keys, you have your escape key, you have an Alt, Windows, and a Control key, and you have cursor keys and things like Home, End, and Page Up and Page Down. So the idea behind this is that you use your Braille keyboard for text entry, but you can use standard Windows commands as well. So for example, if you want to copy text, you can press the control key and the letter C in Braille. So I suppose it's designed so that people don't have to learn a lot of complicated keyboard commands in Braille to simulate Windows keyboard shortcuts.
I think that sounds amazing, actually.
Is this one of those ideas where you think, why has no one done this before? Because it sounds so obvious.
When I looked at it, that's pretty much what I thought. Now, I think it's a product that we're still trying to work out where this might be best used, because it does have some functionality as a standalone product. So, for example, it has a notepad, and it has things like a calendar, and you know, it'll do a few things as a standalone product. But really, to get the most out of this, you need to connect it to something. So, I think we're still trying to work out where this will best sit in people's sort of day to day usage.
Well, I suppose. I mean, I don't know because I don't use Braille. Let me put that out there first. But it comes down to how quickly you can get something done. So if I compare something like using this as a keyboard for my Windows PC, would I be faster creating a document using Braille rather than touch typing on a standard QWERTY keyboard?
And that's it. That's the really interesting, and that's probably what Braillists will ask themselves, because I've met some people who will say, whilst they really, really enjoy and I suppose want to use Braille, especially for reading, they find that they're faster inputting text on a QWERTY keyboard. And then you'll have some people who say, no, I actually can do it quicker on a Braille display. And given that people are using contracted Braille, you would imagine that might be the case. So I think people will kind of look at a product like this and see, where does it fit? If you're carrying something like a tablet already, so if you had something like a Surface Pro, this might be a nice thing you can throw in your bag, connect wirelessly and control the Surface from this display without ever actually touching the Surface.
I think for me, it's a case of, I mean, as you know, and I've said it often enough on this program, that I want to learn Braille. I, in my head, want to get to the point where I can use a display like this with my computer. But I guess for me, I'm thinking, exactly as you said at the top of the interview, there is so much else to learn with having a Braille keyboard with Braille input. That does concern me slightly. And I have seen devices, and I'm pretty sure Sight and Sound Technology sell these, but I've seen devices where they have QWERTY keyboards and Braille displays.
Yeah.
And I've often thought that's quite a good idea. I've been warded off that by some people who use Braille. They say, no, don't do that. Learn to use the keyboard and do that properly. But I think that's a great way to, you know, use the skills I've already got, because I am a touch typist.
Absolutely. So again, you know, HIMSS have done this in the past. Freedom Scientific have done it with, exactly as you say, a QWERTY keyboard and your Braille display underneath. And for people who were learning Braille, this is a great solution. And there's also people who just find it easier to learn to read Braille first and write Braille later. So it depends what stage you're at. It depends what you use already. This device pairs wirelessly with 6 Bluetooth devices, so you can use it with your phone and a number of computers or tablets as you wish. So we're kind of interested to see. We're showing it for the very first time tomorrow in Sight Village on the time of recording. So Sight Village is on Tuesday and Wednesday of this week. So we're showing it for the very first time. It'll be kind of interesting to see the reaction that we get to it.
I feel this is the perfect time for a competition, you know, a touch typist on QWERTY versus grade 2 Braille input using this device. It could be interesting.
Yeah. Well, I think most Braillists would probably be faster than we would be on keyboards, if I'm honest. But I wonder, because, I mean, you're a Braille user, Stuart, aren't you?
Yeah.
So would you prefer, I come back to this point, but would you rather learn, you use Braille, so this is probably the wrong question to ask, but I wonder from a new person's perspective on this, are you better with a QWERTY keyboard, or should you just go all in and get one of these type of devices? Because I think this is a brilliant fusion of the keys that you need from Windows keyboard and the Braille input as well.
This is why I like it. And this is why I suppose when I heard about this product first, it was one of those things, and this hasn't been done before. It's kind of interesting, as you say, fusing of these different technologies. But to answer your question, I think it depends where you are in life. So certainly for adult Braille learners, they will generally learn Braille if there is a compelling reason. So maybe somebody likes to cook and, likes to be able to label their spices and just wants to learn Braille to be able to do that, to be able to know what spices they're using. Whereas I think if you're in education and your needs are a little bit different, you may decide that Braille input is a faster way for you to create information. So I think where you are in life and what you're doing is really important.
Yeah, as you said, Stuart, it is a really interesting time for Braille, it seems, with the recent release of the Orbit and things like the Canute. It's nice that companies are still playing with Braille products, you know, and putting these ideas together. So what's the availability of this device?
Okay, so as I said, we're showing it in Sight Village for the first time this week, and we hope to have them available for shipping towards the end of November. The sales office in Northampton will be able to confirm pricing in the next couple of days, so people can call on 01604-798-070 or email sales@sightandsound.co.uk. And I suppose what I would also say is anything that promotes Braille and I suppose supports people to use Braille in an easier way is a product that we welcome.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Stuart, thank you so much. Are you going to Sight Village?
I am. I'll be there on Tuesday and Wednesday and looking forward to meeting lots of people in London.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, we wish we were there as well. We will be in spirit.
You guys were there too. It'd be great, Craig.
Can you sneak us in?
Well, we're not there. They don't send the likes of us, but they will send some other. We do have some people going from RNIB Connect Radio, so that's good news. So you might see them bobbing around as well. Listen, thanks so much for coming on, Stuart. Good luck with it, and thanks for coming on from Sight and Sound Technology.
Thanks, guys. Pleasure as always.
Thanks, Stuart.
Right, well, thanks for that, Stuart. And time now to turn our attention to a caller who got in touch with us this week because she heard us talking, wittering, as she calls it, on the show about Apple's big event. I mean, we haven't really spoken about it on this show. We were talking, actually, on the Daily Connect, Sean and I, anyway, talking about the big announcements from Apple, which we'll maybe get to before the end of the show if we've got time. But the reason Sally got in touch was because her daughter, who's 12 years old, is looking to get a new computer, and Sally's not quite sure what to buy. Now, her daughter's visually impaired, and she thought she'd come to us. Why us? I don't know. But she decided to come to us for advice, and we thought we would see if we could help. Hello to you, Sally.
Hello.
Now, you got in touch with the station after hearing Sean and I witter on as we do. And yes, you do witter on, Sean, so don't even start.
Never. Fake news.
No, it's not fake news. But yeah, we're having a bit of a chat about Apple and the new technology that was coming out. And you got in touch to say, well, first of all, you didn't know we even existed.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I'm used to that. I am married, so I'm used to that. But yeah, you hadn't heard the station before, had you?
No.
How did you find us?
It just came up on Facebook because I think I must have liked RNIB and I definitely liked Guide Dogs, so maybe it was one of them. And
right.
It just came up and said Apple announcement or something, and I was sitting in the car waiting for my daughter and thought, oh, I'll have a listen of that. And I liked, yeah, it just sounded really good.
Well, anytime anyone says that they like our show, first of all, I say thank you. And then secondly, I just apologise profusely for everything that we've said that follows that, because usually we have to apologise at some point. you did come to us because your daughter is visually impaired, is that right?
Yes.
And you were wondering about how this would work for you if you were buying technology. In fact, you were in the market. You are in the market, actually, for a new computer. And you're thinking about buying a Mac, maybe an iMac, but you're kind of wondering, we'd talked a bit, Sean and I had spoken a bit about using Zoom and how it's not exactly been the greatest experience on some of the computers.
We put you off, basically.
Yeah, we put you off a bit.
So sorry.
Yeah, you did a little bit. I'm coming back round to it a bit. But yeah, it was interesting what you said. Because my limited experience is that visually impaired people think that the accessibility options on Macs are better.
You've opened up a can of worms.
But it's interesting to hear that maybe you don't think that.
Well, it is like anything, you know, everyone's got their own opinion. Some people absolutely love it. It depends on the needs, really. Has your daughter got a computer at the moment?
Interestingly, she's got a laptop, which the council paid for. So that's her kind of school laptop. But that screen isn't that brilliant. So when you zoom in on the screen, it's kind of fuzzy, a bit fuzzy, a bit shadowy. It's not quite as good as it needs to be for her.
Yeah.
So that's why we've been looking at alternatives.
Okay, so let me ask you, how old's your daughter?
12.
Okay, she's 12, so she's obviously, I mean, sounds a bit similar to me when I was at school. I got a laptop, although I have to tell you, the one I got was black and white. And I don't mean the outer casing, I mean the screen. I'm a very old person. But I used a laptop at school and I thought it was great. And it did make a big difference to me. And I had, obviously, enough sight to use it. And that must be the case with your daughter.
Yes.
So what's her condition?
So she was born with cataracts in both eyes, so she was born blind. She's got now, along the line, now she's 12, different things have happened. So she's got no sight in her left eye, and she's got no lens in her right eye and nystagmus as well.
Okay, so she's got the movement, which creates blur and all of that.
Yeah.
But she can see enough to see a screen that's magnified, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, and she has an iPad and she uses that, and she can read small print if she needs to, but obviously not for a long time, but she can read the odd bit of small print as well.
No, I apologise, because I'm going to not say this word properly, but is her sight degenerative?
No. For a long time, it's been stable.
Now, Sally, you say that on her iPad, she can sometimes read small print. When she does magnify, say, on the laptop, do you know what level of magnification she's using? How much she's having to enlarge the print? Like, you know, 8 times, 10 times?
No, I haven't really, because she hasn't used it for a while, the laptop, just because it is so fuzzy. So she tends to enlarge on her iPad. So she does the pinch out thing, because she has to do this thing online that's a maths thing, and that she needs to enlarge that on the iPad. Because when she enlarges that, it's clearer than on the iPad, on the laptop, sorry. So she uses that. And I guess she goes probably to, well, it's font 24 is her preferred reading size.
A 24 size font, okay.
I mean, does she get, are we talking a couple of characters on the screen magnification or a couple of words?
No, a bit more than that. So when she was looking at something the other day and she had it was probably on about 36 size of font, I would say.
Right, okay. Let me just say that the fact that she's got a laptop that really isn't that great for her in the first place is disappointing. If that was provided for her, that really should have been taken into account. You know, is this what you need? Does this work for you? And the fact that it doesn't is really disappointing.
Doesn't happen though in education. This is a classic problem. You know, they give you something because it's the stock council laptop that everyone else gets, and you get this thing. I mean, it's the same in any organisation you work for. They will give you the stock device, and that's a problem. However, if you're looking to buy something that is for your daughter, then I would seriously consider, you know, what she's using, because, you know, it's kind of goes back to this topic that I've brought up a few times on the show, and the guys and I have talked about it so many times. I use Windows at work and I use a Mac at home.
Okay.
And for that reason, I've actually got a bit, because I'm now using a screen reader, I've spent so much time and invested so much time in JAWS on the Windows side that I'm now starting to move away from the Mac, because I'm thinking, well, I've spent so much time learning this, I don't really want to try and learn voiceover on the Mac. Da, 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 da. It just gets too much. So for me, it's a case of, well, I'd rather just use one system. And I've had the joy of using both. I would say if your daughter hasn't been using a Mac before, then that's a whole other learning experience for her.
Okay.
That's something to consider, because it is a different way of working. I always say it's like Windows upside down.
Because
instead of your menu bar all on the bottom, everything's at the top. But you, when it comes to magnification, and Sean, you probably use more magnification than Tim and I do anymore anyway.
Yeah.
I think Windows is better at magnification out of the box than Mac is.
Yeah, I would agree. I would tend to say that I use magnification with high contrast or inverted colours, and I'm not using any special software. There are special software packages out there aimed at magnification that may prove better in your daughter's case. But yeah, out of the box, I find with Windows 10, I just hit the Windows key and the plus key and I can magnify into whatever level I need. It is nice and clear, but obviously I'm using it on a desktop with a monitor. But in your daughter's case, I think it does seem, as that is her primary way to use the computer, is magnification, then obviously the screen is the most important part for her. So it needs to be bright. It needs to be high definition so it doesn't go fuzzy.
Yeah.
That's the main thing. As for whether it's Windows or Mac, yes, I am slightly biased because I started on Windows. I've used Windows for years, and I find that you've got the magnification built in is fine. But then again, if you don't get on with that, you do have other options. Zoom Text, Supernova?
Yeah, so, we're familiar with Supernova. That got a bit tricky when... when they updated Windows, you had to get an updated version of Supernova to work with the updated version of Windows, and they didn't want to pay for it. So it was 100.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, it was 180 to get this update, apparently. And
it's not cheap.
Yeah, it was just a bit. So at the moment, we've got a demo version on her laptop.
Yes. And how does she get on with that then? Does she like that one?
She knows Supernova, but it's still, when she enlarges, it still has the fuzzy screen. You know, when you don't have, obviously, you know, when you don't have much sight, you want a really good screen.
Exactly. And let me just say, that isn't the software's fault. That is purely down to the quality of the screen on the laptop.
But yeah.
I would say, by the sounds of it, your daughter's needs, I would say probably she could get on fine with just the magnification that Windows comes with without a separate package. But then again, as you said, there are trials. You can try these out before you have to buy them and see which one you prefer. My recommendation honestly would be, firstly, does she need a laptop? Does it need to be a laptop rather than a set place on a desk, a desktop computer?
It doesn't need to be a laptop.
Then I would seriously recommend, a nice whatever size display, a 24-inch monitor, and check it out first, to see what the display is like. Try them out before you buy them. Go down one of the computer superstores and see which one works for her. But yeah, I would be tempted to go for a desktop computer with a nice monitor. That's not to say you can't get laptops with fantastic screens, but you are paying a premium for them. And depending on what she needs to do with the actual computer itself, if it's just surfing the web and a bit of homework and things like that, then you don't need a super powerful all-singing computer, but you'd be better off investing that money into a nice, bright, clear screen.
Yeah.
I couldn't disagree more with you, Sean. I could not disagree with you more. Well, here's why. Here's why. Because... I think actually a laptop is a smart move because then, she can use it anywhere, right? So she can have it with her, take it on holiday, do all that stuff with it. I think that's actually a really good thing. I actually think there's a quicker way to get to a solution to the problem with the laptop that she currently has, Sally. And I think that is to buy a monitor, a large monitor that plugs in to that laptop, because you will then find that the screen quality is better. It does depend on some of the specifications of the machine, don't get me wrong, but you might find that you'll get a better experience out of a screen connected to the laptop than the laptop itself. So that's one thing to perhaps consider. And maybe even
But that's an excellent point. Of course you can. Yeah. You can connect an HDMI or a VGA monitor to it.
Yeah, we've looked at that. So we've done quite a lot of research and we've tried quite a few different things. And that is one of the things that we've looked at. But then it's quite hard then because the laptop doesn't lay completely flat. So and obviously she needs to be quite close to the monitor. So there's the issue then of where do you put the laptop so that you can still access the keyboard and be close enough to the screen to see that. So there's that to think about.
Well, but that's actually quite easy because what you can do is you can get like a wireless keyboard and mouse that you can plug into the laptop. And essentially the laptop, then can actually be shut over.
Just goes to the side.
It just goes to the side, or you can actually, I saw the other day in a shop, you can buy like a little stand, it's like a tenner or something, and you can put a little stand, you put the screen on top of the stand, like a little glass stand, I think it was, and put the laptop under it, and then a keyboard and mouse in front. So it essentially becomes like a desktop setup, but you can then take the laptop away and use it as a laptop on its own. My view is if she's not using the laptop as a laptop anyway, then there's no loss, really. And you save some money. Hey, I am Mr. Money Saving.
Yeah, I like that.
And as much as I agree with everything you say there, Stephen, I'm going to muddy the waters a little bit more. This is probably a less appealing way, although depends on her comfortability with her iPad. But you can always get, there are iPad stands you can get with a keyboard, and she could have a Bluetooth keyboard, a wireless keyboard that she could use with the iPad. And depending on, like what Sean was saying, depending on what she's doing and what she needs to do, the iPad can do quite a bit of those things. And she's having good success, you said, with the Zoom on the iPad. It can read that quite well. So you could always get a Bluetooth keyboard for the iPad with a stand, and that could also be another option.
Yeah, that is an option. But obviously the screen on the iPad isn't that big.
It's not so big.
Yeah, because she's got this thing she has to do every week that's called Dr. Frost Maths. And so to do that, to read a sentence of that, she has to do it on the she does it on the iPad because the laptop's too fuzzy. You have to move across the screen in three goes to read the whole sentence. Then you've got to look at your A, B, C, D options and work out which one of those you need. Then you've got to, obviously, you need to remind yourself, hang on, what was the question again? So
it's exhausting.
Yeah, it is. Well, it is. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's why we've been looking at different things. And we looked at work as well. But that was really interesting because we talked earlier about where I work. And my boss has got these massive televisions. They're really big.
There you go.
Yeah, he's just bought them. So we were trying the iPad using Apple TV to the screen, and we were trying a PC to the screen to see, and that looked really good, but it's too big because then you physically got to move your head to see the screen. So it's been a really interesting journey of research, kind of trying to work out what's best.
It can definitely be an adventure. I remember when I went through that progression in my vision, because mine was degenerative, and I went from a standard monitor at the time, maybe a 15-inch, 17-inch, and they just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It's like I'm basically using a widescreen television at one point as my monitor. And then there's that conversation that the guys and I always have of, when does the print and the monitor become too big to where you maybe just have to switch to a screen reader? And since she's not degenerative, like you said, maybe
no, she's not. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully that won't be a question she'll have to answer. But there comes a time sometimes where you say, is this just too difficult? Is the print too big? Is my nose too close to the monitor? You know, is the eye strain causing too many headaches? If you start answering yes to a lot of those things, then that's when the conversation around a screen reader would happen. But I don't know if she's quite there yet. Maybe not yet.
It's like, I mean, for me, it was like, it was getting to the stage where the screen was getting so big and using Zoom text. It was like when I was sending an email, it was like trying to write an email whilst on a bouncy castle. It was the most irritating thing because everything's moving all the time, and it's just not a pleasant experience. And you're right, Tim, and I was actually thinking that as well, but since your daughter doesn't seem to be having those problems yet, that's a good thing.
That's a very good thing.
But obviously in your case, I think having a monitor, try a monitor first, even if you could perhaps borrow one from somewhere just to see what it's like with a monitor on the computer. And then, like I say, wireless keyboard and mouse, or even wired, it doesn't matter, you know, just a keyboard and mouse connected up. And then you have essentially a desktop setup with a laptop. The alternative to that, the other thing I would offer advice on, is if you are buying a laptop, because of the nature of this, I tried it years ago. It was a Dell XPS, which I didn't really get on with particularly well. It doesn't play well with JAWS for me. However, that was about 2 or 3 years ago. Things have changed, and I'm sure the new versions are much better. But one thing I will say about it, it had the most vibrant, vivid, and bright screen I have ever seen, and it was the only screen I could read from. And it was incredible. Now, they're not the only ones that do this now. Microsoft Surface, the Book range, the Pro range as well. But these are very expensive machines. But the thing you're really paying for there is the quality of the screen. If the screen's important, it might be worth the money.
Yeah.
But I think actually I'm going to eat my words, but I think Stephen actually came up with the best thing to try first, and that is just an external monitor. Like you said, though, if you can find the space where you can put the laptop just to the side of a desk and have a separate external keyboard and display there to plug into it, that probably is the cheapest and easiest way to start. And a nice big display is going to make a difference. The thing to look out for on a display is the contrast ratio and possibly the response time as well. And obviously a high definition one, so to get rid of that fuzziness. But was a good idea. But no matter what we say or anyone else says, it is down to your daughter to say, you know what, that's not working for me. You know, it is important. I'm not saying you don't, you know, you're not listening to her, but it is important that, you know, we hear what she's saying and this works for me and that doesn't, because at the end of the day, it is her, she knows her vision and what she needs the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, let's be fair about it. I do know what I'm talking about, and I'm right. So there's discussion here.
But no, that is the tricky part, because, you know, contrary to popular belief, when it comes to vision loss, we are all different. Just like in people, we are all different when it comes to vision, and what might work for one person isn't necessarily going to work for the next person in their vision. So it is going to be something you have to tailor specifically to her needs, and good on her to say, nope, this doesn't work, or this is better, or this is not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely, because we were getting really carried away at work and thinking, oh yeah, this is brilliant, and I thought, yeah, this is the answer, and then when I spoke to her, I realized actually it's not, because that TV is too, like, she'd have to be standing up physically moving,
like watching a game of tennis
to let read the screen, which isn't going to work really.
And you said she's 12?
Yeah.
So okay, so you've got that preteen of, mom, what is this, mom? Yeah.
I don't think Sally's daughter's from the deep south of America. But I could be wrong.
That'd be like, Matt,
mum, thank you.
Don't get me started. Mum, yes.
Mum, yeah, exactly. Mum. Sally, thank you so much for coming on. I hope it's been helpful. And we wish you the best, and keep in touch.
Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Sally. Good luck.
Thanks.
Right, let's get to this then, shall we?
Email. We get email. We get your email every day.
Doorbell.
Ding dong. Here's your mail today.
We're back to the cheerful one. That was terrifying last week. I like it.
Everything was terrifying last week.
The budget was terrifying last
week. The budget was even worse. Yeah, that was equally as terrifying as anything else. And the lack of it. Thank you, by the way, to Santa Guy Chris for being voiceover and reader last week.
Oh, yeah, I used my scary voice.
Thank well you, done,
Chris.
Well done.
You're very welcome. I come cheap.
You certainly did.
It's lucky.
I don't think we could get a donut for you last week, which is terrible. Right, okay. Well, listen, we get loads of emails in, as we do, which is brilliant. And thank you to everybody who emails in at techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And thank you for listening. You know what we do? We don't say thank you enough,
thank
do we?
Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you to the listener. Oh. Right, let's get to some emails then, Chris.
Well, our first email is from Narina, and it's actually about last week's podcast. So we got emails from Narina, from Brian Gaff, and from many others who called into RNIB Connect Radio, as well as to the helpline about where the show disappeared to last week, as it didn't arrive on the podcast on Tuesday at its usual time. What the heck happened, guys?
Well,
I
gave it to Sean.
Sean gave it to Tim.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Tim, I'll give it to Chris.
No, I don't. Honestly, do you know what? I don't know. I think that it was a spooky thing, because obviously it was a spooky show. There was a strange irony in all of this, that the show didn't go out on Halloween, but it was a Halloween special, and it didn't even appear on the podcast on Halloween, but it made it to it the day after. So this was the perfect example of how Tech Talk operates. So completely outside the law.
Hold on. Your Halloween show aired before Halloween.
Yep. Correct.
And then podcast the day after Halloween. So your Halloween show was never on Halloween.
We think
never
outside the box.
That is how we do things, Chris.
I mean, that's genius. I think we're genius, actually, when you think about it. Yeah, that's one word for it. Yeah, so listen, apologies for the podcast not getting up there on time, but hopefully when you did get it, you laughed. And I actually did get an email back from Narina who said she laughed a lot with our silliness.
With us or at us?
I have to say, sometimes... Yeah, well, yeah, who knows? Who knows? But it's one of those, isn't it? You never know how far you can push it. I think the evil sheep, personally, has to win the award. That's what will get us an award, Chris.
Yes, well,
that's
the evil sheep was genius.
It was. That was all of... You know what that was, of course? That was all of the lambs that Sean has eaten over the past few years coming back to haunt him.
Yes, coming back to haunt you. Exactly.
The ghost of lambs past.
It's like the Christmas carol with sheep.
It didn't stop me.
Well, if that's what you did for your Halloween one, I'm looking forward to your festive edition of Tech Talk.
Hang on.
I'll go out at Easter.
Yeah. I'm preparing now. Hang on, are you ready for this? Ho, ho, ho.
Jabba the Hutt.
Jabba the Hutt. Thanks very much. Last time I give you a Netflix recommendation. Right, okay.
Another email.
Yes, yeah.
This one is from our good friend Billy, who says, "Hi, Stephen, Sean, Tim,
hey,
and Chris.
Oh, hey.
Firstly, I would like to say thank you for reading out my poem on the show and for doing such a great job with the special effects and narration of it. My wife Carol and I had a good chuckle while listening to it."
So did we.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, absolutely. "As I mentioned previously, I've now signed up to Twitter, and I am enjoying using it to keep up to date with current events and what's going on generally. Before losing my sight, I was an avid birdwatcher, and some of the Twitter feeds I follow reflect this. A lot of the tweets include photographs of birds, which I show to my wife, and she patiently describes them. Do you know if it's possible to add a name or description to a photo I have saved from Twitter so I can then go back to a particular image and know what it is? I could then share these beautiful images with sighted friends with other similar interests who don't use Twitter. Any advice you can offer would be appreciated. Keep up the good work. Best regards from Billy Burrell." There is a PS. "Have you heard of Apprehended? It's the new smartphone app to let you know that your pet chicken died."
I go.
I'll give you a second with that one, guys. Yeah, it's a 3-2-1-1. I'll give you that, but it is a good joke. Thank you for that, Billy. I will say the poem was better. Yeah, the poem was fantastic last week, Billy.
Was.
That was a really, that was an effort that you put into that, and I sense a Christmas one will be coming. And I think that's being prepped as we speak. I am looking forward to it.
Apprehended. Hang on.
App.
Hen.
Dead.
Dead.
Oh, yes. Oh, thank you.
He's from the north. You can't blame him. Right. So that's a really good question, because obviously we've talked a lot about adding image descriptions to Twitter images. And you can even do it on Facebook, although it's a bit convoluted. But actually adding text to a picture, and I'm assuming you mean like alt text or like a caption type thing rather than on the image itself, how easy is that to do? I'm not sure.
Absolutely ridiculous. This is such a bugbear. Yes, I'm assuming actually naming the photos in your camera roll. If you save a photo from anywhere like Twitter or Facebook, it goes to your camera roll. But it's impossible to name it. The only workaround that I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, is using the voiceover label gesture. I'm racking my brain trying to remember what it is. I think it's
two-finger double tap and hold.
Correct. Yes, that's just what I was going to say, Tim.
And I believe that still works, yes.
So, yes, if you do that when you have the photo open, is that right, Tim, or is it in the camera roll? I'll let you take over.
No, you're doing fine, but I believe that it's just when it's in the camera roll. Here comes the bus. Yeah, I believe when it's just looking at it in the list of photos in your camera roll, obviously, you know, once you're in there, you do the double tap and hold on the photo. It'll bring up another screen that you can then type in anything that you want that to be named, hit okay, and it should, in theory, change the name of it in your camera roll. Now, if you shared that to other people, I don't know that it keeps the name. I don't believe.
That's what I'm wondering. Because if you've added that label on your phone, it's a voiceover label for you, isn't it? So it's not.
Correct. It's just a voiceover
just
label.
For voiceover.
It doesn't change the actual file name or photo name at all. It's just a voiceover thing.
I've never heard of that voiceover label feature. I'm going to try that tonight.
Oh, I use that all the time to get either copy bits of text or rename things. It'll actually come up with the original name or title of something or text of something. So if you need to copy the heading of an article real quick or something like that, you can capture that that text or rename something for your own purposes, rename an app's name, really anything.
What? How do you capture the heading of a... It does nothing to capture, does it?
What you do is say you're in an article and you're at the heading of an article, you know, they have a title of an article. If you do the double tap and hold, when it brings up that window, that entire title actually is in the box already. And then you can just go in the box and like you would edit it or type in it like a text message box. And you could edit it or copy it. And I do that a lot to copy text to put on the Twitter or send information, things like that.
Quite right. I take it back.
I still don't fully understand what that's meaning, but I'm going to try that out. And then I'm going to ask you lots of questions next week.
It's great for things where you get unlabeled buttons. If it just says button, yes. button, but you know what it does, you can label it. So you know that's the settings button or menu button. So it's great for things like that.
But the problem with that one is that if it's a website you're relabeling, then if they do something with the website, that could change. I could go back to being unlabeled.
Yes, and even on some iOS apps, it doesn't stick. So as soon as you close the app and open it up again, it may just say button. It doesn't always stick.
And even if you close it and reopen it, if it keeps it and it sticks, it may get changed. If there's an update to the app, it could break it as
dreadful.
Well.
Why would you bother? Right, okay, moving on.
Moving on to an email from Tim, who is following on from our discussion about learning Braille last week. Tim says, "Hello, team. I would love to learn Braille and would like to know of any training available in the Grimsby, northeast Lincolnshire area. Local societies have said there is no demand locally, so I was happy to hear there may be tutors out there on the Halloween show. I work in IT and would be happy to help set up online training facilities from websites through to online webinars, etc. If there are any Braille trainers who can provide the actual training. I would also be interested in any Braille learning apps or anyone who has the Braille knowledge who would like to work on creating one. I can provide the technical skills for developing the app and publishing it into the appropriate app stores. Keep up the great work. Kind regards from Tim."
Can we give this guy a job?
I know. It's fantastic. What he's offering is amazing.
I know. That's brilliant.
Yeah, and as we heard last time, there was quite a few people that were offering their services for teaching Braille, so it's just a case of getting people together.
You know, if only there was some kind of social network that we could all use that would bring us all together on this. And do you know what? There are, I mean, I'll tell you this, right? There are RNIB Connect Facebook groups in existence, not for every part of the UK. Am I right in saying that, Chris? It's not
yes,
for everyone.
It's regional.
It is regional, right. Mm-hmm. So you get these different parts of the UK, you could put up on there a way of connecting and using that. That's one way of doing it. But actually, you know, I'm kind of making fun of this. Actually, the truth is, this is just a disgrace that we have to go through all this nonsense. But
again, no demand. Yeah, I know.
Well, they say there's no demand, but there clearly is.
Yeah.
Because we're hearing from people every week who want to learn, and there are people who want to teach, and it's like, hang on. So if you're in Grimsby, hello, Grimsby, then, you know, if you've got a Braille teacher there who wants to teach Tim, then he would be very pleased to hear that. So yeah, maybe together we can do this, and we can actually get people trained. I got a call. Wait, hear this. I got a call back from the people who are I've applied to train, and they've said coming soon. I'm like, what does that mean? So you know, but we've got another interesting email on this topic.
Absolutely, yeah. This one comes from Barry, and he says, aimed squarely at you, Sean the sheep in brackets. Never too old. Even though it was often said that it's too difficult to learn as you get older, there are too many things to remember as well as more difficult to feel. Not necessarily so. When I was teaching Braille back in the 1960s, the best student I ever had was a 65-year-old woman who had the added complication of being a very severe diabetic. Even though I've been reading for 60 years, my own reading speed is no better than it was after a few weeks of learning, and although I simply can't read for pleasure, but I do use a little Braille almost daily for making notes, reading the odd bit of information, etc. Having said that, however, it may be a little more difficult nowadays since certain ATs introduced Universal Braille. Taking a machine gun approach and scattering dozens of, to my mind, unnecessary dots on every page. After that, RNIB became unable to supply the rolls of paper for my ancient Braille shorthand machine. I had to spend £3,000 on a Braille Sense note taker. Great machine, but not only too expensive, but unnecessarily contains too much functions, even rather poor FM radio. It sounds as though the Orbit Reader might be the answer to a lot of people's problems and could give a new life to Braille learning. I wonder if there is a gap for someone to develop a learning system to install on the Orbit. Sorry for rambling on. All the best from Barry Haywood.
Wow. Well, I don't think that was rambling at all. I've got to say, that sounds like a fantastic idea. On-device tutorial. That sounds great. Yeah, I will say, I keep saying I want to learn Braille, but at the same time, I'm not going out and finding out the resources because I do feel like I've left it too late. And maybe that's something I do need to get over.
Yeah, well, you guys know my view on this. I've said it often enough. I think that on-device tutorial is the most sensible suggestion I've ever heard. It seems almost so sensible. It's like, what, it hasn't happened yet? I mean, I've called up RNIB to find out what the fingerprint thing is. Someone mentioned this last week. The fingerprint, it's like a manual, I think, but it also comes in CD as well as in large print, which I always find a bit bizarre that they sell all these things in large print. But I suppose if you need that, fair enough. But yeah, okay, so you get the CD. They don't have any. None in stock, and they won't have any for I don't know, years to come, because they don't really do it anymore because of lack of demand.
Lack of demand. Again, that phrase that keeps coming back to haunt us.
And yeah, I get a feeling if I was to set up a shop at the side of the street that sold, you know, Braille learning courses, I might get some business. So I don't know. I'm kind of against this idea that it's not, no one's interested in it. I do think, I mean, we said this last week, I think that the advent of the Orbit Braille device in some ways might be too late for some people, because yeah, we're in a situation now where there are fewer classes, there are fewer resources, if any, that are available to teach people Braille. So yeah, great, hurrah, the unicorn has finally become reality, a cheap Braille device. But by that point, no one's there. And I'm just intrigued to know what happens with this, you know, because I know from my own experience how important Braille can be, and there are people who constantly tell me, nah, forget it, you don't need it, you've got a phone, you can use JAWS. Yeah, do you know what? Today I was writing an email, and there were three words in that email that I spent probably 5 minutes trying to work out how to spell, because I just couldn't. I could spell those words perfectly before, because I could see them, I could remember them, I could get them right. And if I didn't know how a word spelled, I could look at it and remember it. That's what Braille gives you that, yeah, back, and that's something definitely I've lost. And it's a bit annoying, quite frankly. So there you go. That's my two cents. And listen, thank you to Tim, and thank you to Barry as well. And thank you to all of you who take your time to email in, because, you know, it's great that you do. Billy, as you mentioned, Chris, is now on Twitter. He trolls me on Twitter.
Yes, he does.
As he should. So that's why.
He's actually already sought me out as well.
Well, there you go. So you got to watch this guy.
Good to have friends.
Yeah. keep your enemies close. But yeah, so listen, it just occurred to me. Guys, it just occurred to me.
What?
We did Billy's joke, and we didn't use the sound effect.
Wow, wow.
I got a sound effect for this very purpose. Right, I've got to do the joke again.
Okay, I'll do the joke again. There's a PS,
yeah,
which says, have you heard of Apprehended?
No.
It's the new smartphone app to let you know that your pet chicken has died.
Appropriate. Well done.
And with that, I bid thee farewell.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
Take care.
Well, let's talk about Apple before we go, because Apple had an event. You might have guessed. And, you know, normally we'd do like a whole show on this. We'd be like the whole hour. And, you know, I kind of wanted to do that. But Sean and I had a bit of a chat about it on the Daily Connect, and that was nice. But I think, I don't think these shows warrant the full hour anymore. Do you know that, if I'm honest?
Ooh, controversial.
Oh, wow.
How dare you? There was some technology gold there.
No, like what? Yeah, exactly.
Tim?
Sean? iPad Pro? I don't know.
Well, okay, let's talk about the iPad Pro, because iPad Pro comes out to great fanfare. And look, I'm going to give you this, right? I think it is a brilliant machine. It is a brilliant machine. Apparently, the new iPad Pro is faster than any desktop computer you can find, including the Apple ones, but they won't tell you that. And it just seems to me that these computers, these pads anyway, have become so powerful. They can do so many things, and that is brilliant. However, let's just hit the brakes for a minute here, because we're talking here to blind and partially sighted people. Personally, okay, so I can only talk about my own experience, right? I'm not saying we're all the same, because we're not. But my experience is that the iPad is a great device for leisure, for watching things like TV shows. I've used it for that purpose. It's far more powerful than the need for that. But that's what I use it for. For productivity, I don't think it's there yet, especially for those who use accessibility. Zoom is quite hard to manage. It's quite hard to, you know, get it to do what you want it to do. Even typing an email. If I'm using a keyboard and I'm using it visually, I'd have the keyboard connected via, you know, the little folio stand thing. So you've got the keyboard there on and the iPad on there. And then I've got Zoom as far in as I can go. And as I type in letter by letter, it is showing up and it is moving with the keyboard, so it's moving with the cursor, and that's fine. So as I type, it's fine. However, then you need to get to somewhere else on the screen, and you've got to zoom out and zoom back in, and three-finger tap, and you've got the screen's kind of up in front of you, so it's not really easy to... And you're like, oh, forget it. Just give me a computer without a touch screen, and that'll do. And I end up using my MacBook more than I used my iPad, and that's why I think for certain conditions and for certain people, and I think if you're blind, and Tim, you can tell me, I don't see the point in that at all.
Yeah, for me at this point, I've talked about this before, visually, an iPad doesn't have any appeal to me. I can do everything that I would want to do on my iPhone, or if I need to do something a little bit more advanced, you know, productivity-wise, I can do that on my desktop computer. Now, that being said, if I had some usable vision, the iPad Pro does appeal to me quite a bit because I think, and the three of us have talked about this off air, I think that this iPad Pro is a big first step of Apple's to kind of say, hey, you know what? Maybe you don't need a laptop as much. Maybe this will be your computer of the future and just use this iPad Pro. Because even they have said, this is the iPad we've always wanted to design. This is the speed. These are the specs. This is the quality. This is what we've always wanted. And I could see a future where they maybe start to push this more than they would, their MacBooks. It really wouldn't surprise me. Now, again, that's a visual thing that I'm talking about. For me, visually, that would be appealing. I would be interested in this iPad Pro, but with limited or no vision, again, I would just go back to if I really wanted an iPad, I'll buy the one that they came out with earlier this year. I think the specs are just fine. The price is more than half of the iPad Pro that was just announced. And so I think price-wise and spec-wise, it's fine. But again, visually, I can do all this on my iPhone. So it's, I'm kind of 50-50 on it when it comes to that.
Well, let me just say, everyone is wrong apart from me because it was technically amazing. It made me dribble. It was the performance they got out of a small, slim device like that is
absolutely. Would you buy it?
I don't disagree with that.
Amazing.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. Technologically, it's amazing. As a geek that loves tech, I was all into this iPad Pro. But visually, that's where it becomes an issue for me. Do I need this? Will I really use this? And I don't know. I mean, maybe it could replace my desktop computer eventually or a laptop, but
no.
Visually, I just don't think that this is something that I'm going to need to get. Want it? Sure.
No,
as a tech guy, sure.
I'm going to tell you this before Sean gets into his rant. I am going to tell you, I know this would never be a device that would replace my desktop, no matter how powerful it was, no matter if it could take me to the moon, Mars, and then back via Venus. It wouldn't be powerful because the power is irrelevant, frankly. It's not the power that's a problem. It's that you need the touchscreen. Now, you buy a Windows laptop that's got a touchscreen in it, you can use the touchscreen if you want. There are additional extras you can perhaps do with it. You can do the drawing and the writing and all that stuff. But actually, you don't need to use it because Windows hasn't gone down that route at all, really. I mean, it's gone down the touchscreen route, but really it's not gone away from the traditional model yet. You can still buy computers without touchscreens and with them. But with the iPad, and I guess you can argue, well, just buy a MacBook, and that's true, but with an iPad, which to me is a very different device, you cannot get away. I've tried it. I've given it all the time I can. I've spent enough money on these things to say you cannot replace a laptop with an iPad, even with a keyboard.
No, everyone's wrong again. Look, I'm trying to get a good argument going here. You know I love an argument.
Come on, then.
Stop making reasonable points. Firstly, I am not convinced you need to touch the screen on an iPad. I'm not convinced that there's not every action that you can do on an iPad you can't replicate using a keyboard.
Nope.
Let me say that firstly. But look, I got to agree with you. I can't even find an argument there that it doesn't matter about the power. It's the very fact it's iOS. It isn't ready to be productive. You cannot be productive on it. It's fine for apps and, if you're doing a single file edit of an audio file or a bit of photo editing, yes, there's some applications where it's fine. But to replace a laptop or a desktop where you've got the keyboard and the operating system with the power to create, it's nowhere near that. While the iPad has the processing power to be a replacement, the system that it uses is nowhere near. Until we get a file system in there, until it matures, you cannot use iOS to replace a laptop or a desktop operating system. Simple as that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Thank you.
Thank you, yes, thank you. Thank you, Barack Obama, for that speech. No, I mean, the thing is that, you know, I've used my iPhone more than my iPad with a keyboard, and I've got on fine with it, except you still have issues where, for example, I mean, in my old phone, it was Touch ID. Everything had Touch ID. You had to turn a setting on, or actually off, arguably, that meant that your screen would never, ever lock, because that was the only way you could ever really function a phone without touching the screen, because it had to be on all the time. Now, that, of course, impacts your battery. It means that your phone is left on and vulnerable, so if someone steals it, they've got access to everything. That's not a great position to be in. I used to do this on the train all the time. I'd have my phone sitting to the left. I'd have my keyboard here, my little Bluetooth keyboard, and my earpiece in, and that was me. And it was fine. It worked. And don't get me wrong, but doing emails, the basic stuff, fine. But all the kind of other intricate stuff, I mean, even, and take out the accessibility side for a second, just trying to add an attachment from, you know, Dropbox, say, as opposed to, you know, some other place. You only had like the cloud option from Apple. And I know they've added extra bits that help that and make that a bit easier, but it's still a bit fiddly. I would argue, though, and I actually would say as far as this, I think my phone is more likely to be my laptop replacement than an iPad, because I've always found that the experience of using the large screen with VoiceOver, I'm talking with VoiceOver here, the large screen with VoiceOver is a harder experience. It's more unwieldy than on the phone, because it is a different experience, because you've got more on the screen to deal with, whereas on the iPhone, it's all very much laid out like a list. So even though visually it might look like pictures and images and videos and all the rest, actually it's a list. That's how we get it in audio. So I think that's a better way of going. And in that case, I've already got one. Don't need to buy anything new. Hoorah!
I would agree. Yeah, the two-column system for things like mail and settings. I mean, it's fine when you get used to it, but it does add a extra layer of complication when you're a voiceover user.
And let's not forget, of course, they did bring out a new Mac Mini. We'll maybe talk a bit more about that next week, but really, that was, to me, the star of the show. A computer without a screen that's got actual ports in it. And I love it. That and very also nice. New MacBook Air, overpriced. Not worth it. So that was that. So there you go. That's my review of the Apple event. And those guys can argue the case next week. We will catch you again soon. Thank you so much for listening. Remember, the podcast is always available. And you can email us anytime as well. TechTalk@rnib.org.uk. Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.